Young people the world over are watching the progress of astronaut Major Gordon Cooper and space capsule Faith 7 with particular attention. The exploration of space, and especially the effort to land a man on the moon, is the dream of every student with a taste for knowledge and adventure. Tremendous investigations lie before us in space, investigations which may alter our lives to a greater extent than any previous explorations or studies by man. I am John Chancellor at NBC Radio's Space Central at Cape Canaveral. My colleague Jay Barbary will now give us a report on the location of Gordon Cooper and his space capsule.
At this moment, the spacecraft, the Faith 7, is completing its 16th orbit as it approaches the western coast of Mexico, preparing, while we're on the air with this program, to go over most of the southern states, entering its 17th orbit here north of Mercury Control over the state of Georgia. During the next 10 minutes, the spacecraft should cross over Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and out over the Atlantic Ocean once again, beginning its 17th and the beginning of its five last orbits. This has been confirmed that they will be attempted, and Gordon Cooper should complete his mission. All on board is well, John.
The challenge of space exploration has been facing man for centuries. Even as far back as the year 1500 AD, the Chinese Emperor Wan Hu attempted to reach the moon in a chair propelled by 47 rockets with triangular kites for steering. The emperor's premature space probe killed him before he left the ground. Today, however, we are within a few years of a lunar landing. To outline the background of Project Mercury and discuss the space goals ahead for young people, here is Jay Barbary.
Actually, Project Mercury developed as a fast remedy to get man into space in a hurry. Since it was an idea in 1958, more than $400 million has been spent in placing our astronauts into Earth orbit. As the result, man has learned that he can live in outer space and carry out useful tasks. As each flight develops, and in the case of astronaut Cooper's present marathon space trip, man gets a little bolder in his all-new space environment. In the future, a project called Gemini, the follow-on manned program to Mercury, two astronauts will be hurled into orbit for periods extending more than a week. During these flights, the astronauts will attempt a rendezvous, or dock if you prefer, with another orbiting object in space. Then one of the astronauts will get outside of the Gemini spacecraft and see how man reacts to the pure elements outside of the Earth's atmosphere. But most engineers are looking forward to a project called the X-20 Dinosaur. This is currently underway by the Air Force and will be the first spacecraft that will respond to man's commands. When it, a so-called space glider, orbits the Earth, the pilot will have the opportunity to select his landing area and glide out of orbit in a skip fashion to land in the clear open spaces. Then before this decade is out, a three-man team of astronauts will attempt a trip to the moon in a project named Apollo. Once there, their spacecraft will orbit the moon, and at the right moment, two of the astronauts will take a so-called space taxi to the moon's surface, explore it for a few days, and then rejoin the mother Apollo ship in its lunar orbit. After the two are back on board the Apollo, they will return to the Earth. These are bold plans in man's conquest of space for this decade, but we venture to guess they will seem puny to our spacemen of the future.
The students of the Brevard County schools surrounding the Cape Canaveral area are not waiting for the future before getting into the space program. They have tapped in on it now by establishing what they believe to be the first student tracking system to monitor the progress of astronaut Gordon Cooper. This tracking system location was a scene of great activity and high excitement yesterday when the students put their homemade tracking systems into operation during the final hours of countdown. Our man Don North was there to interview test director Kip Heintzelman, telemetry operator Carl Nessemar, and recording engineer Lewis Warren.
While most young people and adults alike are content to hear radio and TV reports of astronaut Cooper's flight, not so the youth around the Cape Canaveral area. They wanted first-hand reports from Faith 7, so they built and operated a tracking station to record information from the space capsule. Here at their tracking center, we might ask, Kip Heinzelman, the test director, exactly what the operation of the machines here is designed to record.
Well, we have radio communications, which is designed to receive the conversation from the astronaut. We have a C-band beacon radar, which will receive radar transmissions from the missile. We have telemetry, which will receive telemetry signals transmitted from the missile. We have a WWV timing system for timing standards. Central control for keeping a post on the count status. Mercury tracking board, which will plot the orbits of the astronaut as he makes his 22 orbits. A closed loop TV system for checking out on all the stations. A velocity indicator for telling the speed of the missile as it's going up, and the launch events indicator, which tells the phase of events which occur during this important event.
Well, it sounds like you have practically every situation completely covered here. Is your equipment that I see here working as well as the systems aboard Faith 7 at this time?
Well, most of our systems work pretty well, but we did experience a little trouble with our data counters for countdown in time, and this is a mobile tracking station, and in moving it about and transferring it from room to room, the some of the wires got broken loose, and we had transformers smoking and wires heating up, and we had all sorts of problems with that.
When did this happen?
Just this morning, before the mission.
Now, the telemetry operator here is Carl Nessem. How did the machine operate today, Carl, and what sort of data were you recording?
Well, the machine today operated very well, and I was surprised. On the time of Monday, we had test signals, and everything was in go position. But this morning, we had a little bit of trouble with connections and stuff, and by the time the capsule left the ground, we weren't receiving any, and we were a little bit worried. So we just waited patiently for the first orbit, and we received very strong signals, and on the second orbit and third orbit, and we did very well on receiving signals.
Sounds good. Lewis Warren, you're the man operating that machine recording the astronaut's voice. What sort of information are you receiving, and what have you heard from the astronaut?
Well, we're recording some very important information. First of all, after liftoff, we have recorded telemetry signals from the capsule itself. We have gotten the astronaut's voice direct from the capsule, and we have clearly decoded his, or broken down his voice, so as we can actually tell what he is saying. We have got an A-OK from him. We have found out that he is A-OK on oxygen, telemetry, and etc.
Well, it sounds like he's in pretty good shape here. What about the shape of the organization here? Have you been able to coordinate all of these systems and keep the dozens of students that are working here busy?
Well, most of the time we work under a strict operating discipline, where everybody is seated at a console, and they're assigned a specific job, and they are to do that and nothing else. But there is coordination, but if we get too many students in it, things will go too fast. For instance, on the when we were tracking with the antenna, we got too many students on it on the first orbit, and they swung the antenna around too fast, and we lost them.
Do you think most students today are aware of the challenges of the space age ahead as you students are here?
No, I don't. I I don't think most students have a good knowledge of the space age. I think this has to be emphasized more in the classroom, and I think it should be, there should be more emphasis placed on this instruction of the space age.
Well, it seems like you're going ahead on your own to make your own selves aware of the problems and interesting developments of the space age. Best of luck to you with the operation of the tracking station at Cape Canaveral. Don North for NBC News.
What kind of man could manage to be part pilot, part engineer, part explorer, part scientist, part guinea pig, and part hero, and do equal justice to each of the diverse and demanding roles being thrust upon him? Well, it is said that Gordon Cooper is that kind of man. NBC's Peter Hackus talks about Gordon, who at 17,546 miles an hour, or thereabouts, is at this moment the fastest man, the fastest Earthman in the universe.
For Gordon Cooper, full name Leroy Gordon Cooper, nickname Gordo, for Gordon Cooper, this flight is the most exciting, most important thing in his life. If he could have dreamed as a boy of anything he'd like to do, Cooper once told me, being an astronaut would have been that dream. But young boys weren't dreaming of really becoming astronauts back in Shawnee, Oklahoma, where Cooper was born 36 years ago. Such wild dreams then were considered completely impossible. Young Gordon Cooper, always crazy about flying, actually was taken up for his first flight at the age of 6. By his father, who was a military pilot. Cooper flew his first solo flight at the tender age of 16. Young Gordon, after high school graduation, spent a year in the Marines, then went on to college at the University of Hawaii for 3 years, while his father, an Air Force colonel, was stationed there, after which he received an Army commission, which he switched to the Air Force because flying was his true first love. The pilot of Faith 7, incidentally, later won his college degree in aeronautical engineering at the Air Force Institute of Technology. For 4 years, Cooper flew what then were the hottest Air Force jets, F-84s and F-86s, after which he became a test pilot and took part in testing several experimental Air Force jet fighter planes. Then in 1959, his greatest assignment, to become a United States space test pilot, an astronaut. Gordo, his wife Trudy, and two pretty daughters, Cam, who is 14, and Jan, who's 12 years old, live just outside Houston, Texas, which, as you know, is astronaut headquarters. Cooper's a real outdoorsman, when he can be, loves to go boating, fishing, and on hunting trips. And also, when he can, he loves to scoot around Houston in his sports car. To test pilot Gordon Cooper, this is the most important test of his life. To young American Gordon Cooper, his spaceflight means a chance to help pioneer the way for his country and the world. Peter Hackus, NBC News, Cape Canaveral.
An astronaut like Gordon Cooper has a lot of homework to do for a spaceflight like his present mission, and there are briefings, meetings, and conferences which he must attend almost constantly. To help him and the other Mercury astronauts keep track of their appointments and their mail, their personal secretary, a girl named Millie Geis, is on hand at Cape Canaveral to keep them informed and on time, at least while on Earth. Here she talks to Don North.
Millie Geis, as secretary to the Mercury astronauts, what are your duties?
Well, my duties out there at the Cape are to keep up with the meetings that the astronauts have to attend, to answer phone calls, take telephone messages for them, to arrange for meetings for them with their trainers and various people that have to get into the area to see them. And I answer, well, quite a bit of their personal mail for them and then their fan mail, or rather the flight astronauts' fan mail at the Cape.
Is it hard to keep track of these boys to make sure they get to meetings on time and keep up with their homework?
Well, not really. They're real good about checking with me and telling me when they're leaving the area and when they're expected back, so that I'll have an idea of just when they'll be back and where they'll be going the next few minutes after that.
Now, I know they're renowned for their sense of humor. It must be rather a fun place to work.
Yes, I really enjoy working with them up there. They work in a very relaxed area there. We have the work behind locked doors, and they're able to get up there and be able to study away from the public and we sort of keep the area quiet for them, and yet we have a lot of fun times up there.
Do you have your own private jokes?
Well, more or less, we have a few. They all like to kid me a lot about my southern accent more than anything, I think. But we have a few private jokes.
Don't we have any astronauts with southern accents?
Well, no, I'm afraid not. They're all northerners or westerners.
So they've got to keep up with your language, too.
Yes, it's kind of difficult for them sometimes.
Their language must be kind of difficult for you sometimes, too. A lot of the technical terms and spaceman technology that they use, their terminology.
Well, yes, it is. Of course, I've been with them for a little over a year now, and I've been with the project for a year and a half, so I've been able to acquire quite a number of these terms and use them and know what they're talking about anyway.
What sort of fan mail do astronauts get, and who sends the letters?
Well, a great majority of the letters come from children in the elementary grades and also from high school students who are beginning to think about the fields that they want to enter after high school and what if they should be engineers, or some of them are very interested in how to become an astronaut and various scientific fields and what they should take, what subjects they should have in school and in college. And then a great many of the letters consist of children or people wanting autographs of the astronauts and pictures, and we try to fulfill their request.
Millie, while Major Cooper is orbiting about the Earth, is it a particularly busy time for you?
Well, no. When he is out orbiting, of course, my office gets pretty quiet around there. A couple of weeks prior to the flight, the telephone calls pick up, and there are quite a number of messages to take and meetings for them to keep up with, and my phones just ring off the wall, more or less. But when they're out during their flight and so forth, the other astronauts have their particular duties in various places, various stations around the world and so forth, and my phones don't ring much because everyone knows where they are and they're busy, and no one is calling the office because they're definitely not there.
So when they're at their busiest times, this is a time for you to relax and catch your breath for just a moment, eh?
Well, not exactly. I sort of sit there and listen and keep up with what's going on, but actually office work is pretty quiet.
Now, Millie, I know the question that thousands of girls, secretaries across the country are waiting for me to ask you. How does one become a secretary to the astronauts?
Well, I started out after college. I majored in commercial education in college. And after college, I took my civil service exam because I thought I'd like to try the secretarial field first, and accepted a position as receptionist for Project Mercury here at the Cape. And prior to Colonel Glenn's flight, the astronauts had no definite office here, and they had no secretary. So naturally, they had a few little things that had to be typed up and taken care of. And in my receptionist position, I didn't have that much work to do at the desk. So they started bringing a few things to the desk for me to do. And when they decided to have an office set up and all, they asked me if I'd like to have the position as their secretary here.
And I'll bet they're certainly glad that they have a secretary like you with such an interesting job, a secretary to the seven major spacemen of the United States.
At this moment, the spacecraft Faith 7 is out over the Atlantic. After just passing the tracking station on the island of Bermuda, all is well on board, and Gordon Cooper is in his 17th orbit on his Marathon 22 orbital mission around Earth. He is now the senior space pilot. He has been for the past 12 hours or so of the U.S. astronauts. He is the longest man to remain in space for the U.S. All has been going very well so far for astronaut Cooper, and he has had what is called here a nominal mission. This means a perfect mission in all senses. Only one experiment failed, and that was a balloon experiment that was tried late yesterday afternoon. But outside of this, it has been really a perfect flight. Gordon Cooper and Faith 7 are pushing back the barriers of space with each successful orbit, and with each advance into space, the opportunities for youth to join the exploration of space increase. Don North now questions John Elms on the future of today's students and the space program.
Mr. Elms, as Deputy Director for Development and Research at the NASA Manned Spacecraft Center, one of your responsibilities is training men for space exploration. How must a young man prepare for future acceptance as an astronaut?
Well, at the present time, the requirements are that he be a trained test pilot with jet experience, that he have a degree in engineering. And as we go down the road, I'm sure it will be helpful for him also to have advanced degrees in physics and mathematics.
Besides the space flight training, what other careers are open for young people interested in the space program?
Well, of course, one of the biggest jobs is the job of engineering leading to the development of the spacecraft themselves. There are literally thousands of engineers throughout the country involved in the development of the spacecraft. There are mathematicians, there are physicists, there are geologists, and biologists, and of course, medics and aeromedics. In fact, almost the entire field of engineering and science is involved in the space age.
Do you expect to find any particular shortages of trained personnel in any one or two of these fields?
Well, I hope we won't. There's a great deal of concern about shortages in engineering throughout the country. I hope that our programs, because of their importance to the nation, will appeal to young people and that they will decide to train themselves for our programs, and perhaps we can pass the problem on to some of the other people.
Thank you, Mr. Elms. Perhaps some of our listeners will be applying to you at Manned Spacecraft Center before very long.
As Gordon Cooper charts a course for others to follow, the fabulous frontiers of space are being pushed back with every orbit. And with the completion of each orbit, he hurls a new challenge at the young people of today to extend our civilization into the infinite domain of space. This is Jay Barbary with John Chancellor at NBC Space Central in Cape Canaveral. We'll be back shortly with another progress report over most of these NBC stations.
Around-the-clock coverage of the 22 orbital spaceflight continues on NBC.